You were saying how she liked you to...
And she got this awful headache one day, and my natural reaction was, oh, you poor thing. So I said, well, I know what I'll do. And I did what my mother would have done for me. And it just appealed to Emmeline, and she thought, oh, here's this child. She's not the slightest bit bothered, you know, that she was looking after Emmeline Pettigrew. And so I always had the job. And when she wasn't well, Fred used to say, oh, go and see to Emmeline. I mean, I wasn't trained as a nurse or anything, but I loved looking after people, and I liked her.
This was just a sort of natural
and
remedy.
And just how it grew. Yes. It was just that I smoothed the head and put some frozen clone stuff on that I happened to have. And she thought it was rather wonderful that I wasn't sort of scared out of my wits of her. Because I just wasn't.
Interesting. But when we were talking about... writing and so on. Did she actually enjoy dictating? Did she sort of act it in a way while she was dictating to you, her
autobiography? Oh, yes. But the loveliest thing was to see her addressing a public meeting because, oh, she was dynamite. She really was. I mean, one moment she'd have you almost in tears, and the next moment you're laughing your head off. It's something she'd tied up with some sadness, and yet there was another amusing side to it.
Well, she clearly was a very
good
speaker.
Oh, yes. She could have been a wonderful actress, I think.
What about Fred, actually? Was he a good speaker, do you think?
Yes, well, he improved with the years. I mean, I'm not saying that I'm a judge of speaker at all, but I know when he first was an MP, he had a friend, Wilfred Water, who was an actor, and he used to ask Wilfred to come and listen to him speak because he didn't want to make a mess of it in the House of Commons. And he had rather a squeakish voice. And Wilfred Water told him to know his register and that sort of thing. And And so that he wasn't a natural speaker, but Emmeline was. It was a lot of Churchill about Emmeline. I mean, you know how he'd woo you with words and then he'd sort of threaten you with words. Well, Emmeline did exactly that thing.
She was a sort of actress.
Yes.
Yes.
And so emotional, but there was something absolutely fascinating about the woman.
Yes, there's no doubt about that. She also had the sort of Eastern religion in a way, and she was all tempted by theosophy.
Yes, she was a theosophist, really.
Was she?
And, oh, yes. But they were a most unique pair, and I frequently, especially here of a day, I'm here for about 12 hours a day on my own, I think to myself, I wonder why I was selected to have all this good luck, because, I mean, it isn't often that a person could say that they positively look forward to going to work.
No,
but I did. And it wasn't a question that when I was in Surrey I was paid overtime, I was not.
Yes.
It wasn't a question that there was an attraction of a lot of salary or anything, it wasn't at all. But I just liked being with them.
That's right. I mean... it was a real pleasure, in a sense, to work.
Oh, yes.
Yes.
And then, you see, I felt that I was one of the family, too. I knew all her relatives, all Fred's relatives. And only a fortnight ago, I had a delightful letter from two of Emmeline's nieces.
Did you really?
Saying they hadn't heard from me since Christmas. What about it? What about a letter? This thing. She certainly channeled my ideas and into reading what she called decent literature. And I remember when I went there, first of all, I'd taken some silly girlish magazine. And I respected Esther tremendously because she was a kind person and she bothered with me as a child. And she had seen this magazine. And obviously I didn't really in my heart think much of it myself because I had tucked it under my desk, you see. And I remember her saying to me, Gladys, she said, what is that magazine you're reading? It was only a girlish thing. So I said, oh, well, it's so-and-so, why? So she said, I'm ashamed that you're reading that rubbish. She said, you're better than that. She said, you're worth something better than that. So I said, oh, well, it was all right, I thought. So she said, yes, but she said, you can do better than that. So I said, well, what? So she said, well, I'll give you some books to read. And from then on, she took a hand in my reading. And needless to say, I've never even bought a magazine since then.
Really? No. She really? What sort of things did she get you to read?
Well, she interested me in biographies and autobiographies. And if there was a leading article in the Times. She read the Times every day, and she thought that it would be informative for me or of particular interest. She would cut it out for me, and the very fact that she'd cut it out, I would read it. Even if I wasn't very interested, I would read it because I liked her so much.
Yes.
And we had a wonderful companionship, and we only ever had one quarrel in all the years we worked together, and I think this will amuse you. It was about the Prince of Wales. It was when he was very keen and was abdicating, you know.
Yes.
And I said, I thought it was a horrible thing of him to do, that he should have let the country down like that. And she said, what utter rubbish. She said he was a man and he was entitled to choose who he wanted. And I said he'd been trained for the job of ruling the country and he shouldn't have gone cavorting off with Mrs. Simpson or anybody else, you see. And she said, oh, well, let's agree to differ. But it was quite heated while it lasted.
So you're really rather more conservative than she is?
Oh, she was never conservative. I've always have been. I've come from a strong conservative family.
Did that never lead to any argument between you and the Philip Lances or anybody else?
No. And as a matter of fact, I'm very wrapped up with the Conservatives here. I'm on the committee of the local Tory party. And I did have a letter from Churchill, which, it was mine because it had been left to me. And I felt that I could never sell it, the signature, and sell the letter for me to benefit. And yet I felt that perhaps when I was dead and gone, there aren't the youngsters coming along who would be as interested as I was in it. Well, our local Conservative Party organised a battle for Britain. It was this year, in March of this year, to try and collect £1,000 for the next election fighting fund. And we was originally, I was a very, very intolerant person.
And, I can't believe it. But
well, yes, I was. But she channeled my vehemence, as she called it, into sort of saner ways. And the fact is that I suppose I just liked her. And because I wasn't the type, really, that used to enjoy being told what to do. But if Esther wanted me to do it, I would do it because I knew I would please her by so doing. And in many ways, she was helpless, in as much as she couldn't do shopping and she couldn't cook and she couldn't look after herself very well. And so I mothered her from that angle. And then she instructed me from the other angle, you
so
see.
It's another partnership in a way.
Yeah, oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
And that's what I say, you see how lucky I've been.
So in a way she was grooming you.
Oh, yes, she did. I owe a tremendous amount to her. And I mean, I every book I read and enjoy, I think, oh, thank you, Esther. I might have gone on with these blooming silly magazines. So much so that it's the only time I think now I am intolerant, and that's when a friend comes here to stay. And she'll arrive with about 6 or 7 glossy magazines, and I think, oh, a waste of money. Put together, you could buy a lovely book of something or the other.
But haven't you got a lot in common in this way, that in a way you both were given tremendous opportunities by the Penick Lawrences,
and we
you
grabbed
moved
them.
Up socially.
That's right. Oh, yes, we
I
have.
Mean, so you're in a similar situation in that way. Except
because Esther, I don't think, had as much of a beginning as I had, because her family were a little, I mean, I'm not being snobbish and you mustn't think this for a moment, but they were very, very working class.
Yes.
And so were my people, but we got one or two clergymen and knocking around in the family.
Yes.
And one of my forebears started the John Groom Cripplage home. And
So
that I had better chances than Esther, and that's why she is so remarkable. And this is just off the record because I wouldn't like Nita to know about it.
No.
But I remember on one occasion, Esther's father came to the office. She was at lunch. And when I opened the door, there was this little man standing there, and he says, Itty knows in. And I said, oh no, she's at lunch, who is it? And to my amazement, he said it was her father. And I thought, oh my goodness. And I felt hot and bothered for Esther, you see, because I know what I would have felt like if it had been my father. And you know all that Esther said? I said, oh, Miss Knowles, your father came while you were at lunch. I said, oh, poor little darling. And he had all those stairs for nothing. And I thought that was marvellous, because he could have let the side down, believe me.
Yes, she was. Was she ashamed of her?
Oh, no, no, that's what I say. She said, oh, poor little man, he had all these stares for nothing. There was no question of, well, I hope you didn't think he was uncouth or anything. Not at all. I mean, it was her father, and he remained her father the very, very end.
But it was odd in a way that you hadn't seen him, wasn't it? I mean, did she keep her...
Oh, no, no. Well, you see, she never lived at home with them after she was 18. And, of course, she was considerably more than that when I first knew her. She must have been about 38. Well, she'd had her own home then for years. So that, of course, it wouldn't have arisen for me to see either her father or her mother. And it only so happened this day was because it was Esther's birthday, and they'd forgotten to post her present. So as he was working not too far distant, he just dropped it in at the office, and that was I never did see her mother. She never kept him. Never kept. Look, do eat some more of these bits, please.
A bit more lettuce, but yes, it's quite harmless.
The pineapple and the tomato, you can do that. And the eggs are all right. And will you have another coffee?
No, that really will be ample. I'll have that if I may.
Eat those bits, really, because it's only little bits. You'll have to pick it up with your fingers, I think. But it's gone very crumbly.
There we are. And I'll spear the bits of cheese.
There's a fork there. Spear the cheese up with lovely. The...
So she doesn't really keep her... family in two good apartments. It's just that there's no occasion really for your...
No, it was just, as I say, that she wasn't living at home.
That's interesting.
But, you know, had it have been my father, I would have been very, very hot and bothered.
Yes.
Which rather shows the difference between us. But I wouldn't have liked it if he'd been my father and turned up at my office, because it might have been her boss who'd opened the door. But it made no difference to Esther. It was her father, and if you didn't like him, well, you put up with him.
She's an independent type of person.
And she respected him. She said to me she'd had chances, he hadn't. He'd had to slog for a living to bring up three children. But there was no question of her excusing him, which was splendid, I thought.
That's very interesting.
And but everybody liked Esther Knowles. And, I mean, I don't know anybody who didn't.
Yes, that's interesting. We started off by talking about when you just left the WIL, you were going to Lady Pettit Lawrence to start working. We never got on to what happened then. I mean, can you remember your first sort of year or so with her, your impression?
Yes, I can. It was chiefly, I went to evening school, and Emmeline had to be waited on a lot. She needed a lot of attention. I mean, she'd lose things, like she'd have her glasses on one moment, the next moment they were under her feet and she'd broken them or something like that. And I was forever looking after her from a personal angle, and would just type the envelopes to letters that Esther had typed and that sort of thing. I used to go to the library and change Emmeline's books, and my goodness, oh, what a burden that was.
Was it many?
Oh, yes. She would think that because she'd ordered a book, it would there on the spot, you know, but she couldn't understand that she was one of about 22,000 subscribers to Mudie's Library, you know. So I was backwards and forwards there. And
She read a lot, did she?
Oh, yes. I used to put in a very long, full, hard day, but I was fit and strong and young. And I used to do those double flights of stairs. I should think anything up to 40 times a day, right until we left Lincoln's Inn. And it would never occur to her that, well, perhaps Gladys is a bit tired, you know.
No, of course, the inconvenience for you was immense. Especially
when you realise that the residential flat was on the same level as the office, but the Lincoln's Inn Society wouldn't let us make a door through.
Is that so? Yeah.
No, because we had a little wash place in the office, only had a little sink, and it was just sort of boarded up at the top. Well, you could hear the River Hole at the bottom running through, so that they wouldn't let you put a door through there. And of course, it so happened that when we left there, it would have to have been put back as it was, and I suppose they weren't prepared for that expense. But it would have saved a lovely lot of trouble. And I said that to Esther one day. She said, good God, don't you be silly. She said, that little wash place is our salvation. She said, when they go up to the residential flat. We know they're there anyway. Because, of course, when you're on the premises all the time, you were never free.
Yes, yes. But, so really you started off as a sort of second secretary in a way.
Well, I was just really, I would say, an office assistant, a glorified office girl.
Mm.
And then, as time went on, Esther would have a holiday and they'd only left me there. And I remember the first time I tried out some shorthand, I wasn't slow in coming forward. I said to PL then, I said, well, could I have a go at doing a letter? So I said, so long as you don't go too quickly. Well, you see, that's a game where he was nice. He said, oh, well, it's a good idea, let's try it. And he went very slowly. Well, that gave me a lot of confidence, and I went on from then. And when Esther came back, I told her I'd done some letters. She was as pleased as punch. There was no question of, oh, my goodness, are you going to usurp my place or anything? And she was absolutely delighted.
Mm.
And then Esther said to me one day, have you told Emmeline you've taken any letters for Fred? So I said, no, I hadn't. She said, oh, well, I think you should. And I did. So Emmeline said, oh, good, let's try some. And then, of course, it went on and on. So that I was a secretary, I used to cook, I used to look after her when she was ill, I used to take her for walks, I used to live with her in Surrey, and we were hardly ever parted.
That's very interesting. So, in a way, did they actually pay for you to go to this night school?
Oh, no, no.
I mean, you just went...
No, it was just ordinary LCC evening school. I think each term I had to pay 1 and 6 a term, I think that was all.
And that was secretarial training?
No, that was just... shorthand. I taught myself how to type, and just shorthand. And I was never very good at bookkeeping, but I got through.
Yes.
But then I had a father who was keen for us to get on. When we were learning shorthand, my sister and I, he would, when we got to a certain stage, he would make us sit down, and he would read the leading article of the evening London Evening News to us, and we used to have to take it down in shorthand and read it back. So, of course, again, you see, I was lucky having a father who cared.
Yes, that does matter tremendously.
Oh, yes.
It?
And again, I loved him so much, I'd never have disappointed him. And another thing he would do, if we had nothing to do, he'd make us get the dictionary out. And he would go through and ask us words that we could know or should know. And if we didn't, well, jolly well learned it. And Esther and I kept that up till the very day we parted off his company. We used to... You see...
That's Webster.
Well, we used to call it our Bible. And Esther and I, we hardly ever went out to lunch. We were usually too busy. But we'd get Webster out, and we'd find a word we didn't know, and we'd write it out a few times and then remember it, you see. Mm-hmm. So that I had lots of encouragement all round.
Yeah, anyway, so then you gradually sort of became her secretary,
yes,
did you?
Yes, and then did every mortal thing
Esther.
And eased Esther off, and then, of course, when Esther got ill, I used to do both of them. And then when Emmeline died, as I say, I retired, or thought I was going to retire, did for a few weeks. And then I went back and stayed there until the very, very end.
So did Esther take on more things?
Oh, no, she really retired.
No, I really meant when you took on more things, did she take on less things?
Oh, she had less to do, yes.
Did she?
And then it was then that when I was very busy and was absolutely pressed, what she could do to help me, she would.
Yes,
and
so
the other way around.
Yes,
you see, even if it was to make me a cup of tea, I might, because Emily, she dictated for hours, and Esther would come in and she'd say, oh, Gladys, would like a cup of tea, dear? And I said, oh, I would. And she'd make it for me, you see, which was very, very noble, really, because she was still my superior in a way.
Yes.
But she never felt it like that at all. She said, there's nothing in for a dick about making a cup of tea. She said, well, you'll make me one, won't you? I said, well, of course. She said, well, there you are.
How did they live then? When you first went there, that is in the, what would we be,
1924.
Yes. Mm. How were they living? They were spending the weeks in London.
Yes,
they?
And then... They had got this beautiful house four ways, which was about 2 years old, that's all. The garden was just uncultivated. Well, it was laid out, but Emmeline designed that. But, of course, everything was tiny and looked raw and naked. But, of course, with the years, it grew up, and it was the most delightful place. It really
so they
was.
Go to weekends?
And,
there,
yes, every weekend. They went. The house used to rise about 2 o'clock of a Friday, and they would meet together at Waterloo Station and get the train down to Clandon. And their chauffeur would meet them there with a car.
I see.
So you were off then, of course, because you...
Oh, no, we did Saturday mornings as well.
You mean you... Oh, I see, in the London
In
part.
London, yes.
I see,
oh,
so
yes.
They leave you work to do.
Oh, plenty of work, yes. And then, of course, on top of the current work, we had filing to do. And so many of their personal friends would ring up. And they would treat us as personal friends so that you couldn't show them off, as it were. Or one of her brothers or sisters might turn up. Well, you've got to entertain those. And
yes, I see.
And that's, it was like one big family, because if the PLs weren't there, well, then I would entertain them and give them a meal if they were staying, if they wanted to stay in the flat. So that I never knew when I was off duty. Esther was much more fortunate than that. Mind you, it was my fault. I took it on. Nobody asked me to do it.
Yes.
But I did it because
anyway,
I liked it.
But you don't have a trade union attitude.
Oh, good God, no. I think not. No fear.
They would sort of, what would they do over the weekend? They'd entertain guests, I suppose.
And their friends, local country friends, would come and see them. And Emmeline would garden. She used to love gardening. And Fred would, he'd cook the supper. But Mrs. Plour, the woman from the village, she'd cook their lunch. Mm. And then they'd go for a drive in the afternoon or call on some people. Mm. And might do a bit of writing, an article for a paper or something.
Yes, I see. So they then come back, what, on Sunday night?
No, Monday morning.
Monday morning,
yes. And then the rush would start. He'd got to be at the Commons by about 2:30. Mm. And he'd stand with a watch in hand and he'd say, either to Esther or me, I'll give you exactly 1 minute to finish preparing that card, and that's the schedule, all the day's engagements. And he'd stand there, my goodness me, and most off-putting. He was here once, it was on 10th of October, that was the day that he and Emmeline used to celebrate their engagement, you see. Well, Emmeline was dead and gone, but Fred said to me on the Thursday, he said, can I come home with you for the weekend? So I said, oh, yes, of course, why? So he said, well, he said, you know, it's my special day on the 10th. So I said, yes, I know. And they always had the same thing to eat, which was roast duck, a gooseberry pie, and green peas. And you had to hamper these green peas in October, I can tell you. There weren't any deep freeze ones.
It was on his anniversary, was it?
Yes, of the engagement anniversary,
yes,
you see.
I see. Mm.
And they always had champagne. So he said, well, you'll have to get a duck and you'll have to get the champagne. I said, here, just a moment. I said, you know, it's Thursday. But anyway, I did. I got it all from Selfridges because I had to cook it when I got home. But on the Sunday, Esther was here too. We were going for a drive. We were going to take Esther and Pethick to Broadway to see the Broadway Folly, you know, and take them up the tower. And my husband was washing the dishes. Esther was drying, I was putting the things away. And Pethick Lancer stood at the door with his hat on, leaning on his walking stick. Come along, you three, come along, you three. I said, here, it's all right for you, you've only had to eat. I said, this has all got to be cleared up. But you know, he badgered us until I said to Peter, you just tell him that you're not hurrying.
Mm. Was he actually impatient by
Oh, him? Yes, yes.
Was
and
he
worked to, as I say, really split seconds.
Did he?
Oh, yes. Mm. Right until the very last moment that he could work.
With a very closely packed
Oh,
time
yes.
Deal.
He never wasted half a minute. Never.
Is that so?
Never wasted a second at all.
And the same with wasting food and...
Oh, yes. He wasted nothing. Every moment of his life and what he had was lived or expended to the full.
Mm-hmm. Was he in a hurry always then? Was
yes.
he brisk? Sort of
always in a hurry.
Mm-hmm.
He would say, come on, come on, come on. And in that tone too, I mean... Emmeline, well, she'd alter her mind. I mean, she was going out for a drive and somebody turned up who she thought she ought to talk to and entertain, well, the drive would go, but not Pethick Lancer. She'd say, well, all right, you better get off now. I'm going for this. I've got this engagement. And it's because he couldn't revise his mind over those sort of things.
Interesting, yes. So that means that some people would get a bad impression,
I suppose. They did. Mm-hmm. And often people said that he was the rudest man in the world on the telephone. And he could be too, especially when he was bothered. And I know when Emmeline was ill, a lot of people phoned down to Surrey, and he was appallingly rude. He told him to get off the line. Well, I mean, it was just absolutely out of court. I said, well, what would you say if people didn't care about Emmeline and didn't ring? He says, oh, well, they might know I'm busy. I said, well, you've just got to put yourself in their place. They want to know how Emmeline is. And then, of course, he would be over sort of effusive when they rang again, or if they rang again. Yeah. But he could be damnably rude.
But
like
it would
that.
Be, when you say rude, I mean, just very clipped in the way he'd reply.
Well, he'd say, now once somebody phoned and he was making pastry. Well, it's hard to imagine a man his calibre doing that sort of cooking, but he did make it. And his hands were covered in flour when the phone went. Well, how in the name of glory is anybody to know at the other end? Mm. Well, he bawled them out completely because they'd interrupted him, made him answer the phone. When his hands were covered in pastry.
I understand this. I'm a bit like this myself.
Are you?
Ashamed to say, yes. I mean, you know, I've got a one-track mind. If I'm doing something, I don't want to be interrupted.
I think men have more, because a woman's got to have, like even in a home, you've got to sort of dovetail things. Mm. You've got to, like if you're cooking, you think, oh, well, that'll be so-and-so. Well, I might dust the bedrooms while that's going on. And I think women are much more pliable.
I think probably women are better secretaries for that reason, too.
Well, I think usually they're more patience.
Well, the essence of being a secretary is to be able to do a lot of things.
That's right, a lot of things together, yes. Mm. Well, I suppose hundreds of times I've been typing in the kitchen at Four Ways while I'm cooking the lunch or dinner or something. And we used to have quite a lot of people there. But I was lucky in as much as cooking never bothered me. But Esther used to say to me, she says, the worst day's work you've ever done when you cooked that lunch for them. Of course, they were home and dried then, you see. I mean, when the housekeeper was away, well, Gladys, you'd come down Four Ways, wouldn't you? And they knew I loved Four Ways. They knew I was happy down then. Of course, I thought, oh, well, got to eat and might as well cook their food. Because
anyway,
I like doing things for people,
yeah,
you see.
Yeah, it's very, very interesting. But how was it different then, being Fred's secretary to being Emmeline's? How did it differ?
Well, hers was much more personal, and she might say, I mean, she might be dictating me a day like this, and she'd say, well, Claire, shall we go out for a walk? Well, that would be in office hours. Well, that was stupid, but I would be content to work on in the evening and to get my work done. But Fred would never do it. We'll do our work first. Then we might go for a walk. But that's where Emmeline was so spontaneous, you see.
Yeah, so you never knew what might be happening.
Oh, no,
where.
Never. She had, there's a lovely garden in Lincoln's Inn, which really is for the residents only. And we had a lovely couple of Spanish chairs made for her with big wide arms. And when I knew she was down there, if it was very hot, I said, I don't know whether I was silly or not, I think, oh, I bet she's thirsty. I'll take her down a drink. I'd gallop all down the stairs with this drink, you see. And then she'd say, oh, well, sit here with me. And I'd sit there, and in those days I smoked. And then she'd say, you've got your notebook, well, we'll do our letters down there. But Fred wouldn't unbend like that. Mm. I mean, if you were doing letters, you've got to be in the office to do the letters.
I quite understand.
And
yes.
And I suppose I was a bit spontaneous myself. It suited me. Mm. And
so it's all much less formal. It's more
easygoing.
Oh,
much, much less formal, yes. Mm. And I used to undress her and put her to bed and help her dress when she got up. I didn't have to do it, but I like doing things for people, and I like looking after people when they're ill. Mm. So that it suited me, and it suited them, of course.
How did they compare dictating letters then? I mean, were they the same? I imagine he was very businesslike.
Oh, yes, very businesslike.
How would she behave then? I mean,
well, she'd go on galloping on. I mean, you've got to be able to take some shorthand down with her. I mean, it was no good saying, well, just a minute. She'd hold her and say, oh, go on, get on with it, sort of thing. But he was slow. He dictated much more slowly than she did.
But I imagine in a very considered way. That
yes. And there was never any revision of his letters. And many a time I've typed screeds for her and she said, well, I don't think I like that very much. And she'd tear it up and you'd start again. Yet, on the other hand, if she was ill, very under the weather, and she got a lot of personal correspondence, she'd say, oh, you do that for me, dear, will you? Well, I used to write to her brothers and her sisters in her name, and they didn't know the difference. Mm. Now, Freddie wouldn't, I don't think he would have done that. Mm. Because though we frequently signed his letters, we had to say why we'd signed them. And there was no messing about with his signature. We signed our own signature and say this letter was dictated but was not read by Lord Peel. Yeah. And so that there was never any misunderstanding, but you could forge Emmy's signature. Well, not forge it, just sign it. And and she never bothered at all. She never worried her, but he wouldn't let her.
What about sort of being organised and so on? I mean, he was very systematic in everything.
Oh, gosh, yes.
So was she like that?
No, she was the most disorganised person under the sun. She would, you'd say, well, you've got an appointment at 4, Emmeline. You're going to start getting ready at 3. Oh, yes, yes. You sure? Yes, she would. Well, if you didn't go over there at 3:45, she's probably lying down, because she loved lying on a bed.
Did she?
Oh, yes. Mm. And 3:45, then, unless you've been there long before, there's no movement. And you just have to fasten on to her until she really got moving.
Yes. So you had to really, in a sense, take her over.
Oh, yes. You had to really carry her all the way. Mm. And strange enough, Helen, the second wife, was like that. She loved lying in bed too. Mm. We used to have to bail her out.
She'd read, was she, while she was horizontal?
Oh, yes, read, yes. Because she didn't, she was very deaf, so she didn't have a wireless near her. And she didn't want it. I mean, she didn't depend on outside entertainment. She got her, she had a craze on the Rosicrucian.
Oh, yes.
You remember
Annie Kenny went.
Yeah, Annie Kenny and that block. And she'd be miles away with those books. You could talk to her and you could say, Emmeline, are you listening? And she never heard you, and it wasn't put on. Mm. She'd be miles away, absolutely out of this world.
Mm. How did we discuss their weekly timetable, that is going up to 4 ways and
yes.
back and so on. What was their yearly timetable? I mean, did they have regular holidays and things like that?
No. She might go
away. I'm talking
away.
About the 1920s.
Yes,
you know,
early days. He would never be, unless he was going abroad, he hated to be away from home more than 5 days and 4 nights. This is a fact. So that it's no good. I mean, he broke it once and he's staying here. But then it's because he had me here and I could do the work if there was any to do, because he'd bring it up here, you see.
Was it that he didn't like being away from home?
Well, he got bored. He got bored being on holiday, you see. And 5 days or four nights. And I said to him when he did this extra night here, it was 6 days and 5 nights, I said to him, you've slipped up this time. So he said, why? So I told him, so he said, oh, no, I haven't. He said, the work's waiting here. He said, it's in my case. And yeah, he fished it all out. And
he sounds more and more alarmingly like me, I'm afraid.
Well, I wouldn't say alarmingly. I think he's rather nice.
Well, yes, but I have got this slightly obsessive sort of regularity about me too, actually.
Well, I think men generally are more like that than, as I said before, than women.
So anyway, did they go, because they travelled a tremendous lot.
Oh, yes, they did travel a lot. But they would have little holidays away from each other. And originally, Pethick Lodge used to have a week on the, well, no, five days and four nights on the river with a friend, Fred Hankinson, who used to live in Budapest. And it was the war that sent him home. They used to have this holiday on the river. They'd get a boat from Salters. And I think they spent the whole time rowing with each other. And they used to take food for these, most of these days, which always consisted of a hamper with chicken. I used to get that from Harrods. And it was a regular old do, because when the holiday was over, Fred Hankinson would come to the office and say, oh, that Pethick Lawrence, really, he gets on my nerves. This is his friend, you see. I said, oh, well, what's he been up to this time? And he'd say, so-and-so. And he really showed me up. And I said, well, why do you go then? Oh, well, I think it's going to be different every year. And it never was, you see. But in the end, as they both got older, it got to one day on the river, and I think that was a bit too much.
But like boys, really.
Oh,
like
yes, absolutely, yes. And because he'd done it once, Pethick Lawrence would do it forevermore until old age stopped him, you see.
But their annual routine then wouldn't...
Well, they didn't have a routine,
no,
really.
I see. Mm.
Because everything, his life impinged on political
Parliament.
Events and Parliament. Mm. And Emmeline had more personal friends than he had. Mm. And they would say, oh, well, what about coming down to Torquay, Emmeline? Well, she'd go off with one of her cronies and meet up with some more at Torquay or something like that. And he'd have a few days down, might go for a weekend, but he'd come back. But he didn't like holidays very much, because he felt it was a bit of a waste of time. He thought it was essential people should have a break. Mm. But then he would think it was a holiday if you got him to clip the ivy off the trees, because it was different from his work, you see, his own work.
Yes, but it's a strange marriage in a way, isn't it? As you say, it's a very successful marriage, and yet it's successful partly because it's separate.
Yes, and it was a marriage of their minds, not a physical
yes.
marriage at all.
Yes, it's
not that
interesting, yes. And they each have their own friends.
Oh, yes.
Their own bank account. Yes.
Everything
their own
is
holidays.
Separate. And yet they were completely dovetailed. They adored each other.
It's a very
no
remarkable
doubt. Oh,
thing,
it was a
it?
Most remarkable marriage, yes. Mm. I don't know. Have you ever seen the tributes that were paid to Pethick Lawrence after his death in
the
House of Lords?
Yes, I have.
Oh, you've seen this. I've got them here. As a matter of fact, I got it out. But, Hailsham.
Mm-hmm.
His speech is absolutely true of the man,
yeah.
and so is Alexander's of the marriage, because he knew them. I think he was actually at their wedding, mm. and Esther Knowles was at their wedding, by the way.
Was she
yes,
really?
Yes, she was, yes.
Was she really?
Yes, now that was a funny sort of wedding. They were married at Canning Town, and they didn't let their relatives come at all. They had all the people from the poor law.
Yes, I think I read
to give them
that.
A break. Yeah. Well, you see, you need people to think of that, isn't it?
Yes, that's remarkable, absolutely remarkable. What about daily timetable?
I can tell
I mean,
you that
they're
all
in
right.
London, say,
yes.
when you start
well,
off. What
Pethick Lawrence would be up at 7, breakfast at 8. He had the same, a similar breakfast every day for the 37 years that I knew him. And never did it alter one whit.
What was it?
And that was a pint and a half of barley water with lashings of sugar and about a half pint of hot milk. 3 pieces of toast and a half pound of jam. Yes. And he always ended, he would never let you decant the jam. He liked it in the jar on the table. And he always ended up this feast by having a dessert spoonful of jam straight from the jar and he'd eat it, chopping it away, yes.
Not a healthy breakfast at all, actually.
No, dreadful, but he was as fit as anything. Yeah. Fit as fit could be.
Shows you how unimportant diet is. Really.
Yes.
Mm. So
but then he never, obviously, ate more than he could consume. And
what
then I'd be at the office at 8:30 before the breakfast things were cleared away. And that's where we got on very well, because I loathe being late for any appointment. And I'd sooner be early than late. Mm. And so he knew that if I said I'd be there at 8:30, it'd probably be 8:25, you know. And we'd do the post together. And then he'd say, oh, we'd better go in and see Emmeline. I'd go in and see Emmeline and have a little powwow with her. Go
what would she be? What's
she'd
her
be
time
in bed.
Then?
She'd still be in bed,
I see, yes.
And she'd be reading her letters, and as she read the letters, they would be scattered page by page all over the floor, the same with newspapers, which did drive poor old Freddie absolutely mad, but he had to put up with it. She never altered. And then I'd go to the office, down all these stairs and up this lot, to collect my basket with my diary in it and my notebook and any things pending, come back up to do Emmeline's first. By that time, Pierre had digested his letters. He went for a little walk, maybe through Lincoln's Inn Fields. That time he came back, I was back in the office and ready for work. Mm. And we'd work until 1:30 when he went out to
that
lunch.
That is, typing out letters and things. You mean.
Yes, getting the urgent ones done and this schedule, daily schedule. And those which could be left until the next day, I would type but leave him to sign overnight.
When you say daily schedule, you prepared a schedule every day
every
for the following
day.
Day.
No, every day for the day.
Oh, for that day.
I mean, you would get it prepared as much as you could the day before, but there were always bits to add in, you see, and sometimes there were so many you had to start the schedule from scratch again because there wasn't enough room.
So this would be typed out?
Yes, on a 7x5 index card that was all typed out, and as I say, right until almost bedtime, there wasn't a moment to waste.
With the time?
With the time and the meeting or whatever it was. Mm. And any correspondence relating to it was all folded up and put in order as it came down, so that when the first one was done, he'd spin that off. And
that was just for Fred, not for her?
Oh, no, because if you did that for her, it'd be upside down. She'd lose it before the day had started. She was always losing things. She was a dizzy Lizzie. She really was. And because it made a lot of extra work, too.
I'm sure it did.
And she used to tell fibs, too. She used to say that... you never gave it to me, Fred. I remember you just never gave it to her. And I said, what's this doing in your handbag? And there'd be whatever it might be, you know. And she, oh, well, I didn't think you had. But she would never say, oh, I'm sorry. I really thought you hadn't given it to me. But Freddie would. He'd say he was sorry, all right.
But this unpunctuality and this lack of order in dealing with papers and things, didn't that infuriate him? I mean,
yes, it did. But he was able to control that fury, as it were. He got to the end of saying, oh, well, that's dear Emmeline. And of course it was, and he knew that he'd never get her to change. I mean, it was impossible for her to change. Mm.
So in some sense they reach a sort of arrangement with each other.
Yes.
They understand
yes,
each other, and they live with each
yes.
other.
Yes, and of course they were each so busy in their own way that frequently they used to have to type memos to ask the other one to go out with the other one. Now Emily might say, oh well, she'd like to go to the theatre. And she'd dictate a memo, you see, and you'd have to head your paper, a memo to Lord Pethick Lawrence from Lady Pethick Lawrence, the time and the date, all underlined. Then you'd type the message, and then he'd dictate one back, and you'd take it all the way upstairs again. And it didn't seem to occur to them, but picking up the phone, they could say, Emmeline could say, Fred, I'd love to go to the theatre, are you free at all? And he could have said yes or no, but oh, there's all this palaver, and carbon copies kept of these messages.
Good heavens.
Yes.
So there was an elaborate filing system there,
oh,
wasn't there?
God gracious, yes. We had four foolscap filing trunks, each with the four sort of holes in it, you know, four drawers in it, and it stood just about up to here on me. Mm. And there were 16 drawers, and they were crammed full.
Mm. And indexed by what? By correspondent or what?
Well, an index, 5x3 index card with each folder was numbered, and you put the relative number on the index index card, which were alphabetically filed, you see. Mm. Then they had to have cross headings because, I mean, somebody might have written about some charter and he might have forgotten the name, and then you think, now, what can you do to help him think of it? I said, oh, well, put it under charter. And it might have been Basil Eid or something, but you could forget a name, but the subject you probably would remember. Mm. And so there were all sorts of cross headings.
And this is all him?
Oh, yes.
I mean, not
and
her.
And she did up to a point. And sometimes if you, she might want a filing card for some reason or the other. And I remember once giving her one, and I said, well, this was the address I'd got, and here it was. And she said, what's the number in the corner? I said, it's a filing number. Well, when she dictated the letter, she said, reference, 1, 2, 3, 4. And it wasn't a reference at all, really. It was our method of filing. But strangely enough, that was the only time the penny really dropped that the stuff was even filed. Mm. She was really a dizzy Lizzie. She really was. And he was just the reverse. But as I say, they admired each other for what the other was.
Well, we've got them past breakfast, and he's dictated her
yes,
letter.
Yes, but then he'd clear off at 1:30. She'd have lunch at home. She always lunched at home.
Cooked for her by the housekeeper.
By the housekeeper, yes.
What about him? He went off the House of Commons.
He went out, yes, and he lunched at the Lords or the Commons, you see, beforehand. Mm. And then he used to ring us perhaps twice during the afternoon to see if anything come in the post from the Commons or the Lords. Mm. And then I suppose we'd last hear about him that day about 7 o'clock, just when he was going out to dinner. But sometimes he would come home to dinner with Emily, but not very often. So she more or less fed alone. Mm.
And he comes back, sort of, presumably, very late at night.
Oh, yes. And sometimes not at all during the night, if there was an all-night sitting.
So what does she do then? She has...
She had her own cronies and people popping in then to see her.
But, I mean, first of all, she doesn't get up until late.
Oh, no. Well, if she were bored and the weather was bad, she might stay in bed all day. She often did that.
Did she really?
And
a real actress.
Oh, good gracious. And if you could have seen her with... She had lots of men friends. And if it were any other woman, you'd say she was vamping them. Mm. But I'm quite sure she never did. I mean, it was never that sort of thing. But they just used to love her, and they... men that really quite grown up and not as old as she was. But I believe they were often more in love with her. You know what I mean?
So she had a sort of salon.
Oh, yes. Well, of course, Fred didn't take part in that because when he wasn't doing anything, he went to sleep. And she said, told me that's why she gave up having a salon, you know, with sort of mutual friends, because he'd go to sleep. And he did, too.
Yeah.
But anything that he was doing and interested in, of course, he was very wide awake. And
He presumably, he was either holding the floor, dying,
yes, or else he was bored.
Or asleep.
And then asleep, yes. And he used to sleep heavily, too. It's very funny.
But anyway, so she, say it's a normal day and she's getting up. She'll get up, what, about 10? Having had her breakfast
10,
in bed?
10, yes. She'd have her breakfast in bed and she'd have a bath. And if she wasn't going out and she was very energetic, she'd put a dressing gown on, and she'd dictate to me, or Esther, whichever was free, really.
Mm.
And then she'd have her lunch, and then, of course, she always had to have a rest in the afternoon, and go over about four to get what letters you'd done signed, or report for whatever you've been doing, or the other.
Mm.
And she might go to a theatre with one of her friends, or...
And eating in the house.
Oh, yes, flat. And he's there all the time, and... Then she'd, if she went to a theatre with one of her friends, she used to go out with Mark Plowman quite a lot, a very fascinating man.
Mm.
And, Fred was told all about these things, of course.
Yes, yes.
And he was a great friend of Mark's as well. But she would go out with anybody who was interesting and would talk. She loved talking.
Did she?
Oh, yes. Mm. But she had lots and lots and lots of friends, women friends too. Mm. But everybody really adored her. And Esther knows, she used to say, well, she's my lodestar. So I think that shows...
And sums it up. But she wasn't a creature of habit like he was.
No.
She couldn't be sure that she'd be
you would never know where you were going to find her, let alone be sure what she was going to do. No. I've known her to cry off an engagement, a speaking engagement, maybe 10 minutes before she's due to go out because she didn't want to do it, and then she'd get Fred to do it, and Fred would. They were never let down completely, but she might decide that she didn't want to go, and nothing would make her go either.
So, again, I'm being sort of completely frank with you. They're living in separate bedrooms. They get up at different times. They have all their meals at different times.
Oh,
they're
yes.
largely in different places.
Yes.
So the only time they're together is when they're at Four Ways.
At Four Ways, yes.
Is that right?
And then some evenings, of course, when he hadn't got any, there was nothing much on at the Commons, and he might come home and have a meal then with Emmeline, and they'd talk, I suppose. They used to talk a lot together.
Did they?
And he used to go into her room every morning and chat about the newspapers. And, you know, if he had a letter which was interesting, he'd pass it on to Emmeline. They had complete freedom with each with the other, and they each shared their correspondence, their thoughts, their friends, anything like that.
So they may be leading separate lives, but
they were completely shared, yes. Mm-hmm. And there was never any question of if Emmeline wanted to do something. I mean, he wouldn't say, oh, must you? And she wouldn't say, well, you got to go away. She said, oh, that'll be nice for you, Fred. You'll enjoy that, dear. And he would say so-and-so to her. There was never any disharmony like that at all.
That's very interesting. So, although, obviously, I mean, I don't believe that any couple never has disagreements. They do.
They do.
Does.
It must be so.
And you say she had her side.
Oh, yes, she did,
I mean,
yes.
He'd be cross with her.
Yes,
but,
rather.
Generally speaking, it was
It was a wonderful marriage, there's no doubt about it.
Because that in itself seems to me to be an achievement, a marriage.
Oh, it was, because especially in those days when so many different things were expected from a woman than what she gave to him. I mean, they really were pioneers in that sort of marriage. No doubt about it.
Right, so, and they felt that, did they?
Oh, yes, I think they did. Because that was the idea. You see, she refused him two or three times, and he was a man of such integrity. He promised her that she should have complete freedom to do what she wanted, but it would never occur to him to go back on that at all. And he honoured that, you see, and he respected her for having these different ideas, which in many cases were his ideas as well. But it was a wonderful marriage, there's no doubt about it.
Well, let's stop there.